Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. It's more than a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. It's perfect for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and finally in control. Inside the program, group or private, we tone down the harsh inner critic, break old patterns of procrastination and self-sabotage, and start redefining ADHD on your own terms. So in just a few weeks, you'll find yourself grounded, confident, and leading your life with intention by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. This is where your too much becomes your magic and where real lasting change begins on day one. If that speaks to you, find more at fitology.com. That link will be in the show notes. And today we have with us Ashley Ludwinski, a licensed clinical social worker working with clients in both New York and Georgia. At her practice, Redbud Counseling Services, she offers therapeutic support for individuals and couples navigating a variety of experiences, but especially those identifying as neurodivergent. Ashley became invested in social and emotional learning while working as a middle school educator before moving to New York, where she was primarily a stay-at-home parent for her two children. Having navigated the limitations of healthcare and social support systems during this time, Ashley found her home in social work, where systems are considered deeply impactful on individuals' well-being. So she integrates this lens into her work, prioritizing compassion, empowerment, and destigmatization while acknowledging the real systemic factors that folks face regularly. Ashley, thank you so much for making the time today. I'm really glad to see you.
Thank you for having me, Jessica. I'm really glad to be here.
Well, I'm so thrilled to have you as an expert here in the field. Even though you don't identify with ADHD personally, some people very close to you do, and your practice pretty specifically serves a differently wired population. Mm-hmm. So could you share a bit about what you love so much about fancy brains?
I love a lot of things about fancy brains. I do have folks close to me. So both my partner and one of my children are diagnosed with ADHD. And I, so my exposure to ADHD began when I was, just navigating my partnership and dynamic, but in the sense a more intimate exposure to it. But I have also, as an educator, worked with students and worked with other members of faculty. I think when I was like 21, that was the first time that I really started to understand the stigma around ADHD and just being able to see it in a different way. So what I love about fancy brains is how so much of the world is seen so differently and how there is really incredible ways of putting different types of pieces together in ways that I think folks who aren't experiencing ADHD don't do. And I think I shared this in some of the pre-podcast information, but my first real understanding of just how incredible the ADHD mind is was doing some work and training as an educator with someone who had really been diagnosed with pretty severe ADHD. And he was teaching us how to bird watch, basically. But what I later found out was that he had become a world-renowned birder, mostly because his brain could just see these micro movements in ways that like I couldn't, I still can't bird. I'm so terrible at it. My partner's really good. But this teacher was able to see, or this birder was able to see these very tiny slight movements in the trees and pattern changes. And so that's just one way, but I think in general that's something for me that I've seen across the board, like folks who are able to just notice the world and see the world in a totally different way and then put things together in unique perspectives that I really appreciate.
Yeah. What you said called to mind two different ideas. One is that there's some research out there that discusses ADHD as a not a deficit, not a disorder, but actually a hyperconnectivity of brain networks, as compared to the average population. And then there's another school of thought that may not have as much evidence behind it, but it's pretty powerful and an interesting thing to think about, which is that ADHD is an evolutionary advantage because the people who had those qualities and traits made better hunters. When you mentioned the ability to see things moving in the trees, I thought, oh yeah, that sounds a lot like that
Yes.
work.
Yes, absolutely. And I definitely resonate with the research around hyperconnectivity, not only because of information pieces, but we also I think we also notice that or I notice that with clients also where there's a connectivity around like emotional awareness or emotional recognition and moments that are happening in the day. So for example, if there's something in the here and now that is reminding us emotionally of something maybe in the past, then that can also be a really quick link for folks. And sometimes it happens so fast that we don't always have the language to acknowledge what's going on. But I think it also it allows us also or allows the folks who I work with to also have a lot of awareness around even behavioral patterns and relationships and ways that things might feel similar to the past, which can be both wonderful and challenging at the same time.
100%. Yeah. We've talked a bit, you and I, offline about the challenges that people with ADHD face. I wonder what you see coming up as maybe the top three or five challenges.
I think one of the first one is you named it early on, shame as one of the main things that folks face, and I think that that is because there is such a misunderstanding of what is going on. So I do think ADHD is perceived as a deficit in a lot of different contexts societally. So folks generally internalize like something's wrong with me or I'm bad, and that leads to a lot of what I've noticed is more shame spiraling and negative internal narratives. So that's I think number one. Number two, I think also is kind of going along with that are emotional highs and lows. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just that because there isn't a lot of support, especially within the educational system as it is today, to be able to support folks in managing emotions, I think again that can leave folks ill-equipped to be able to have regulating strategies, especially because a lot of the times they're going to look a little bit different or even need to show up a little bit more than maybe other folks in our lives. So that can also, I think, be really challenging and then kind of lead to number one, the shame spiral. And then number three, I think, is tied to that too. It's just finding resources to be able to support the managing or being able to communicate the ways that our brains are functioning or what's coming through verbally. I think that sometimes I've noticed for a lot of my clients, like there's so much information internally, and being able to put that out in a way that's cohesive and streamlined can be very challenging. And then again, lead to like number two and number one, where it's like I'm feeling frustrated because I'm feeling misunderstood. And then I'm going through a shame spiral because I'm feeling really activated. So I think those three are the biggest ones that I've noticed for folks or that I experience pretty regularly with clients.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I wonder if the DSM will ever include any kind of emotional regulation component in diagnostic criteria for ADHD. I hope so. It's a
I
huge
would,
part.
yes, I would hope, certainly hope so as well. And I mean, just across the board, I wish that we would just acknowledge like how incredibly powerful it is to also have some psychoeducation around that for folks. So, you mentioned I work with couples, and that is really where I start with couples who have come in, and especially when one or both folks experience the impact of ADHD, because a lot of the times the emotional dysregulation that's happening in the relationship is stemming from the, again, like the emotions showing up and then some sort of outburst or like internal retreat, and then a lot of shame around that. But if we can slow that process down in session and actually understand what is going on neurologically with that, then it takes away that second component of shame and just allows us to have to feel more equipped to be able to actually manage what's happening. So that I start there always with clients across the board, but especially with folks who have been diagnosed with ADHD or who suspect that they are neurodiverse in some way.
Yeah, what a gift that is to start there and be able for your clients to be able immediately to jump into practicing the pause and then practicing articulating what's happening inside. And I would imagine that maybe another challenge, kind of a secondary or adjacent challenge to the resources, is that ADHD can be so different from one person to another. Even if you have a couple of two partners and both have ADHD, one's experience, even just of that emotional component, could be very different from the other person, don't you think?
Oh yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And I do think that this is where, to be honest with you, I love the Gottman method for folks. I integrate a lot of different types of therapeutic approaches with couples. The Gottmans are one, and then also Terry Real's work, Relational Life Therapy, is another one that I draw heavily from, in addition to Sue Johnson's work. But all of those folks really highlight the importance of understanding that that is the crux of being able to have a healthy relationship. And I think to your point, if we just assume, oh, you have ADHD, so I know exactly what your experience is, then we're completely missing it. And even within a partner dynamic where both folks have the same diagnosis, we're really not understanding the internal world of our partner if we're just using that kind of really broad definition to say, oh, well, this is what this means for you. So I feel like, yes, to answer your question, I totally agree that each person and the dynamic is going to be unique. Each person also is going to have a variety of past experiences that's going to impact their understanding of themselves and the here and now. And each person deserves that space to really be able to tell their story, and to be understood by their partner and others as well.
Yeah. So you mentioned the self-compassion piece and Gottman's work. I understand you also work with internal family systems, which is one of my personal favorites as a therapy client. What do you think makes those particular modalities that you use so powerful for neurodivergent brains?
I love internal family systems. That's amazing. I'm so glad that you have exposure to it as well. So what I love about internal family systems is the whole premise is destigmatizing to begin with. So it's the concept that there are lots of different parts of ourselves that have been formula that have formed throughout our lifespan, and they all have different needs and different things they're afraid of. So instead of saying, I just want to get rid of this part of me, or instead of saying, I wish this part was different, we're instead approaching this from a very compassionate lens and saying, all parts are welcome, which is exactly what the founder of, or the create the person who came up with IFS says. It's all parts are welcome. So I think that particular strategy is also helpful because a lot of folks who do experience some form of neurodiversity do have trauma, and sometimes it's complex trauma as well, just because of the way that we're in a world that is just not designed to support folks well, who identify as neurodiverse. So IFS is trauma informed. It can be slow. It goes at your own pace. And also it's empowering because it's really, I'm holding the space with clients and they are getting in touch with what is really true for them internally. So instead of me telling them what to do, we're discovering that together. And I think that that is incredibly empowering for folks who have often been told essentially to just ignore their own internal cues to adapt to a world around them. So that I love that for that. It's like the self-discovery, challenging the shaming framework. And then also Gottman, the reason I love Gottman is because it's very skills-based and it's pretty step oriented. So they actually have handouts. They walk you through the steps. It's kind of there's some repetition. You're building on skills that you begin with. So I think in that way, it is a really helpful tool for folks with ADHD in particular, some folks with ADHD in particular, because it just breaks things down into really manageable sections. And then it also is very evidence-based. So they have so much research that you can draw from, which for especially around meta emotions, I think are particularly helpful because some folks across the board, what I mean, with ADHD or not, like that is hard because again, societally, we don't really spend a lot of time supporting folks in having emotional awareness. So for folks who may be resistant to doing some of that work, it is helpful. I have found it helpful to have some of the data to support, like, hey, this is actually not just coming out of thin air. You know, this is based on some really significant and longitudinal studies that have been done.
Yeah. It's almost like appealing to two different sides of a person or a couple of different kinds of people. There's IFS that leans pretty heavily on imagination. I mean, you imagine this family within yourself made up of your own parts. And then there's the Gottman style, which is very clear, very delineated, very evidence-based, and can appeal to either style. Very cool. Before we move on, I do want to talk about supporting a partner with ADHD. But before we get there, on the topic of therapy, could you just say a little bit about what someone who hasn't experienced therapy before might look for in a provider? What, even beyond credentials, because those are easy enough to figure out, what else should someone look for if they want to approach therapy for the first time?
That's such a great question. For individuals, I highly recommend that folks do, well, for both individuals and couples, I highly recommend doing a consultation. And if you're a couple, I highly recommend that both members of the couple be present for the consultation so that you can just get a sense of that person's energy and presence and how they're going to interact with you. It's not, you know, a fail-safe experience, but I think that it is helpful to just get us. I mean, we are going to connect with folks and not connect with folks, and sometimes that has nothing to do with, you know, credentials or anything like that. I do think it is very helpful to ask providers what their understanding of ADHD is, and to listen for, you know, are we viewing this as a strength? Are we understanding the cultural and societal impacts? Are we also understanding that there are some real practical ways that we're going to need to show up? And sometimes, like, we'll do emotional work, and sometimes we might, you know, do a plan for the upcoming week and support breaking down some bigger tasks. And I think also just coming into that consultation with an awareness of what you're looking for. So, is it that you want someone who's going to be able to bridge between both coaching and doing some more emotional intensive work or like trauma history processing? Or are you just solely looking for a particular type of processing with someone or even a coach, for example? So I think coming in with an understanding, listening, asking about this provider's experience with ADHD slash supporting folks with ADHD and how they view ADHD within the larger context of the world is helpful. And in terms of what to listen for, I feel like, I don't know. What I have found personally is that the folks know what they need to hear from. I mean, I really do believe that if you feel uneasy about something, then that's your gut telling you that maybe there's some misalignment here. You can further explore it, but also maybe just something to pay attention to. So yeah, because I kind of to your point earlier, I think folks look for different things and providers as well.
Yeah, that's solid advice. So let's talk a little bit about ADHD in partnership. Living life with a partner who has ADHD has its own challenges, just like living with any other partner. You, in your personal life, you've really gone the extra mile to support your partner. And I wonder what advice you have for others on how to show up in a way that conveys your love for that person, that does not emphasize shame, or maybe I should say it de-emphasizes shame for someone they love. What's your top line advice?
So many things are running through my head right now. I think the first thing that I would really emphasize is, again, that these are two adults in a relationship together, and they're both, I mean, outside of extreme situations where, maybe it's an unhealthy dynamic, but if it's two partners and they're both adults, and you're both contributing to the dynamic of the relationship. So I think also being open to owning, like, there are ways that, whether you have ADHD or not, that you're going to be showing up that's impacting what's happening in the relationship. And then being really curious. I think maintaining that lens of curiosity, compassion, and desire to understand, above being defensive or wanting to prove that you're right or wanting to demonstrate how much you know. I think that is those two pieces are really important. And it's also part of the reason why I start with psychoeducation too, because especially for partners who are partners who maybe don't experience ADHD, because a lot of the times I hear folks say, like, "Oh my gosh, I had no idea that's how that felt," or "I had no idea this is what you were thinking. Oh my gosh, that's so much." And so I think that maintaining a level of curiosity around each other's internal experience can be really power. It is really powerful, and it leads to a lot more compassion and understanding. That said, I also do think it is very helpful to understand your own limitations and your own needs, as well as your emotions, because being able to come to the table and say, like, "Hey, I'm feeling really dismissed," or "I've asked about, XYZ 5 times, and it hasn't happened, and I'm feeling dismissed," can lead to the partner who maybe unintentionally forgot all these things, or really had a plan in place but just didn't have a chance to act on that plan yet. It can help to then for them to actually understand your own experience as well. I think that that moment right there is where it gets challenging and tricky for folks, because sometimes even sharing our emotions can be activating for a partner, like with rejection sensitivity, which is so understandable. So sometimes we just have to practice, like, "I'm not accusing you. I just am wanting to let you into my world of what's happening right now. And I know this wasn't intentional, but I would like us to work together to some towards something that can be sustainable for us both." So kind of maintaining that we mentality.
And an assumption that the other person really is doing the best that they can, that it's there's no malintent there. If you had a one-liner for each half of a mixed relationship to hear, a person with ADHD and a person without ADHD, what do you think each partner in that really needs to hear about the other?
Ooh. It's interesting because it's actually really some I think I would say this as something similar to each of the partners. I would say look like I would just recommend, like, look for the what I'm going to call the inner child. Like, look for the part that's hurting, basically, and try to connect to that part. Just like, and if you can, like, try to put the things that are getting in the way of connecting to that part to the side just for a moment, that they will also get some care, but just really try to look for that part that's hurting and connect with it. I think that that can go a long way for a lot of folks. And I'm, I'm sure on both ends, there's usually hurt that's happened. And sometimes, and most often, it has nothing to do with a relationship, or maybe it has some to do with it, but the wounds are so deep and they're just from well before the relationship even started.
Yeah. I can imagine that being great advice for all kinds of relationships. Parent,
Yes.
child, teacher, student, friend to friend. I mean, that's just really solid all around. So thank you for that.
Yeah. Thank
So
you.
as we start to wrap up, Ashley, I would love for you to imagine a listener with ADHD hearing this conversation right now and taking away one small thing. If that person were to try one small thing differently because of hearing this talk, and 6 months from now they're doing much better, what is it do you think they might thank you for helping them understand?
Well, I hope that the biggest message I want to send is like those big emotions are not bad and they're
Yeah.
just information, and you deserve the space to have those tended to, whether it's by yourself or someone else, with inviting someone else to support you and tending to those spaces. And you're incredible. I mean, that's what I hope folks can hear that, and also know that there are tools and strategies for being able to support that self-soothing or just soothing in general, co-regulation with a partner, and being able to build trust both with themselves and the environment around them, to be able to move toward their values and goals in a way that they feel empowered by. I
Yeah.
don't know if that really answers your question, though. I hope it did.
Yeah, I think it does. And I think that's beautiful. If somebody could take away the ideas of self-trust and feeling worthy of having the space to do their own work, 6 months down the road, they're going to be doing so much better.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
hope so.
Fantastic. Ashley, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom and compassion and clinical knowledge and personal insight. I think ADHD in relationship to others is a topic that we miss out on too often. So I'm grateful that you took the time to contribute to the conversation and even more to changing the way we think about and discuss neurodiversity. I know people will want to find you and learn more about Redbud Counseling. So for those who want to reach out, how can they find you?
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. This has been an honor and a privilege, and I really appreciate this. And the space is so incredible. So I'm excited for you, and I'm just really thrilled to be here. So thank you for that. To find me, folks can just use the website, redbudcounselingservices.com, and there's a contact form on there if they want to reach out. And there's information about the services I provide for both individuals and couples at this time.
Fantastic. Ashley, thank you again so much. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.